Word on Today FM.
We're going to talk to John Gibbons in our weekly environment spot about the various promises been made by the political parties in their manifestos. But before we get to that, John, and it is entirely relevant, COP29 has been an utter failure, it looks like, an absolute disaster. Held in an oil-rich nature in the country Azerbaijan, it has been dominated by the fossil fuel industry. It's getting absolutely nowhere. I think his final statement is going to resile on last year, and when it finally made the commitment to try and reducing fossil fuel emissions. But is this part of a wider thing which will also feed into Ireland's general election, in that those who've been trying to persuade the world that we need to change to save the planet have failed?
Yeah, good evening, Matt. I think that's probably a fair way of summarising it. I think the wind has changed, and basically now climate action is facing headwinds all over the world. I think the kind of progressive politics that are required for climate action, they're also in retreat in many parts of the world. And I guess we'll see how that pans out here in Ireland.
Yeah, but have you worked out why they failed? If you have an existential crisis, as you believe it to be, and many others like you believe it to be, why is it that you failed to persuade people of that and of the need then to take measures to mitigate?
I'd say we've failed, Matt. I don't want to take all the credit for this. I think the failure is wide, and there's enough credit to go around. We in the media, we in political life, we in public administration, the business community has failed big time on this. They have faffed around, they've made all kinds of green nonsense promises and done very little, continued to pour billions into fossil fuel investments and sectors long after they promised to withdraw funding from them. So essentially what we've had is a dance. We've had all these powerful interest groups from, as I said, big business, corporations, through to political movements, all talking a good fight on climate. But when it comes down to it, to actually get anywhere with this involves taking on these groups and facing them down.
But is it also the communication failure to get support from the general public, in that many of those who preach the environmental message could be the 21st century equivalents of those who preached religion in the past? And there seems to be a sort of, just like there was a kickback against organised religion to a large extent in the 20th century, the secular religion of environmentalism has now been rejected by many people.
That's a really strange way of putting it, Matt. In late 2024, we just confirmed this year to be the hottest year on the instrumental record, probably 125,000 years, and you're framing this as some kind of religious cult. I mean, I hope you're being facetious. I believe you are.
It's the measure of this, the way of the delivery of the communication.
I know, but you know, how do we frame this communication? If we push climate action into a corner and say it's a religious cult, people at home are going, oh, okay, well, maybe I don't have to be concerned about this. Maybe I'm hearing it on the radio that this is just one of these weird ideologies like Scientology that people get into. And this is it's a fantastic get out of jail clause for people to say, actually, on the one side of the argument, we've got the scientific community and the climate communicators, however inadequate they may be and however many shortcomings they have in doing their job on the one side. And on the other side, they're up against 95% of the media, 98% of the business community, and probably 90% of the political establishment. And you ask me why we're losing. And here's the strange thing. You know, we, the environmental community, aren't losing. We're all losing.
Yeah, the world is losing.
Yeah, the world is losing. And, you know, I'm sorry to labour this point, Matt, but, you know, if we continue to paint environmental action into this corner, then we continue to basically
get failure. But given the importance of saving the world from catastrophe that could be caused by the increase in temperatures, which is caused by man's behaviour, particularly in relation to the burning of fossil fuels, if the current approach hasn't worked, you don't double down on it, like in the way the Democrats doubled down on Kamala Harris in the way they had done with Hillary Clinton 8 years earlier in the face of the opposition. Surely you have to find some other way.
I agree. And again, if this is a monolithic thing, I would agree with you and say that their movement, right, this church, as we call it, the climate church, have been preaching all wrong, and they've pissed people off, and they've failed. I would agree with you if it was this monolithic movement, but of course it isn't. It's a whole bunch of people, many of them from the scientific community. I was actually interviewing a climatologist recently, and he was sort of apologising for saying, he said, look, we're not professional communicators. He said, we get whacked around the head by experienced debaters, media experts all the time because they're better at debating than we are. And he said, kind of help. We should be getting help from the media instead of getting used for target practice.
But I suspect as well that you're getting clobbered by sort of paid lobbyists and sort of black ops operations on social media.
I think that's entirely true. And here we are. Here's the situation that, you know, all the indications are that we need to act with extreme urgency. Yet the signals that we're getting from society, from communications and so on, are full steam ahead towards the iceberg, Matt.
And yet, that's why I'm bringing you to all our party manifestos, because there's many promises in relation to climate change, but I wonder how much action will actually follow it. Before we talk about the positive measures that have been proposed, I suspect you'll have looked at something I brought up with Michael Collins earlier, nitrates, for example, because it seems now there's a competition between the various parties to promise farmers that they will continue the derogation from the nitrates directive from the EU.
That's right, Matt. I mean, basically, the nitrates derogation, I suppose, to give it its proper title, I mean, essentially, it's a license to pollute. And by the end of 2026, Ireland will be the only country left in the EU exercising this license. Every other country is either has withdrawn from it or is in the process of withdrawing from it. So when you hear, say, Simon Harris describing it as a red line, what he's saying is he's far more concerned about looking after the sectoral interests of 16,000 people than he is the water quality for 5 million people. And I find as an electoral strategy, it's extraordinary. And I don't want to pick out Simon Harris especially.
Fianna Fáil are saying the same about nitrates.
Precisely. I mean, Micheál Martin is every bit as strident on this. They're prepared, for some reason, to bend the knee to a vested, to a well-organised, well-financed, vested interest group every single time, rather than say to the Irish public, actually, we have got a crisis in water quality. We have to stop talking nonsense that we're turning the corner, and give us another 5 years and it'll be grand. The EPA have said this time and time again, and you alluded to it in your earlier interview. Water quality is not getting better. It's not good enough. And I really wish the public would challenge politicians in support of this derogation on the steps and say, is this one sector's financial gain more important than water quality and the public health, by the way, because nitrates are a serious public health risk apart from being...
In what way?
There's blue baby syndrome, for example, is one of the syndromes, and this has been studied in various countries, where nitrates in the water, Matt, are basically bad for your health. And that's one specific example. We could do a whole segment on the dangers.
But so is in sewage. Wouldn't we be better off, first of all, getting rid of something like sewage to our water processing plants before turning to the nitrates, which at least do help us to provide the food that we live on and which we also export? And the argument also coming from the farmers and those who support them is that whatever complaints you might have about the use of nitrates and other production methods in Ireland, they're far superior environmentally to what happens in other countries, where we would be importing the food from there if we actually handicap ourselves.
I know, again, this is the ground we've covered many, many times. And again, to echo your own response to this with Michael Collins a few minutes ago, we can do both at the same time, as we well know. We can never say that, you know, if it's okay, if there's sewage getting into the water system, then that's an issue with Irish water. If there's nitrates pouring into the water, well, then that's another issue. We must manage both of these issues. We can't do one and then ignore the other. Or more importantly, we can't use one as an excuse not to deal with the other. So I think that's probably how we need to approach this.
Listener says, didn't RFK Jr. say all this and get called a loon on the show? He hasn't been talking about nitrates in water. He's been talking about fluoride. And fluoride has been a very important health addition to our water supplies over the last half century and more. Okay, so other things. Let's get off the agriculture and the nitrates. Because what other things jump out from the manifestos to you in relation to making things better, and making things better in a way that maybe the voting public will buy into?
Okay, I'm glad you asked, because the first thing, and I hate to break the habit of a lifetime and be positive here, there's a huge shift, Matt, in the mood music among all the political, well, sorry, on, among almost all the political parties. I mean, I read through all the relevant sections of pretty much all the manifestos in preparation for today. And okay, obviously a certain amount of people making the right noises, but it's remarkable the improvement in basic ecological literacy that is now pouring through these documents, right? They're actually thinking about it. Again, having read them, say, back in 2020, back in 2016, it was very much just the token nod. So what I would say is that the big difference this time around is that some of the big ticket issues, like, for example, the commitment to renewable energy, is that something all parties in Ireland can agree on. They all agree, for example, that we need to upgrade our ports. We need to upgrade Airgrid. We need to put money into these things. So these are some of the really positive things that I've seen come out of this, that renewable energy is no longer a contentious issue. Retrofitting is no longer a contentious issue. These might sound obvious, Matt, but these are actually huge wins in the time that I've been looking at this. So the key thing I would say, and I think Caroline O'Doherty put it in the Irish Independent very well earlier when she said that the Green Party must be shivering in the cold at the moment because their clothes have been so completely and thoroughly stolen by the other parties.
But does it matter if the other parties, does it matter whether it's the Green Party does stuff or whether all the political parties do it?
I would suggest, and obviously I'm not here to speak for any political party, but I would suggest that people who are promoting or are committed to sort of green politics want people to take their clothes because they represent the kind of progressive climate politics that we urgently need. And I suspect that the feeling really is that, in a sense, their work is done as long as that is carried forward. And you see it, for example, in the Labour Party manifesto. I mean, I'm well old enough to remember when the Labour Party was not exactly a progressive voice within the last decade on climate action. I would say quite the opposite. I see a great turnaround, I think, under Ivana Bacik in that. It's a much more cohesive approach. And they've also, for example, you asked about the nitrates thing, they're sort of sitting slightly on the fence, but generally speaking, they're being highly constructive, and you see this, Matt, as I said, across the board, parties that are sort of that had been hedging, but there are still areas of concern.
Okay, just get away from Ireland briefly to finish. It seems like there's something smelly in the state of Denmark.
Go on.
Flatulence tax.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. Basically, the Danish government are bringing forward a tax, basically. And it's probably incorrectly named flatulence tax because, of course, it's on methane tax on livestock. But, of course, most methane from livestock, from ruminant livestock, comes from burps rather than from the other end, right? So technically, it should be called a burp tax. But anyway, the idea here, Matt, very simply is that the ruminants, which are basically animals with multiple digestive chambers like cattle, they produce, as part of their digestive process, a byproduct of that is they emit huge amounts of methane. And they're a huge source, in fact, in Ireland, a massive source of methane, which, of course, is a extremely potent greenhouse gas, 80 times more potent than CO2 over a 20-year period. So therefore, even small quantities of methane have a huge climate effect in the shorter term. And of course, our crisis is in the shorter term. So basically, what the Danes are doing here is they're bringing this in. They're telling farmers that by 2030, there will be a tax that will come in at a certain level. I think it's around about $100 a tonne. And then that by 2035, that rises incrementally. That basically sends a price signal. It's basic stuff which is called the polluter pays, and this is a really progressive step in the right direction. And if any party, by the way, had included that in their manifestos for the 2024
they wouldn't have got
election,
any votes in
they
Ireland.
Would have been ran out of office.
John Gibbons, thank you very much for being with us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word on Today FM.